interview recording with Dave Daly, and today's date is the 18th of October 2018. And Dave, tell us your earliest memories of radio.
Oh, earliest memories of radio. I love listening to the radio, listen to legitimate radio, let's say, inspired by the likes of Mike Murphy in the morning time, and listened to every link, loved the whole thing. Watched Blue Peter, one of the guys there was introduced as a new presenter, and he was a DJ on a station, probably a local radio station, and they went to visit him as one of the projects on Blue Peter, and he was in a studio with vinyl and he was playing the records and hit the headphones, and I said, that's what I'd love to do. It was just great. But he showed people how the Segway records behind each other, and then the following week he was actually a presenter on Blue Peter, so they took him home with them. But that's the kind of thing. And then 208, the great 208, Radio Luxembourg, coming in and out, all that kind of stuff. Then we had our own stations, which came about in my first memory was the late 70s, when music broke from disco to punk and all that kind of thing. And we had some radio stations appearing on the dial then. And the very first ones, I suppose, were Radio Dublin, would have been the first one. And I was lucky enough to know Aidan Cooney, who would call himself Aidan J. People had the propensity at the time to call themselves by their other names. You know, I think it was just a fashion thing. I actually started off as David Paul, then I became David Andrews, and then I finally used David Daly or Dave Daly when I was on KELO and Capital Radio, finally. But it was great. The days were great. And the real sort of proper sound, Dublin was a bit haphazard. Had a few kind of dis and does, which isn't nothing wrong with it, but just it didn't really garner listeners the way that proper radio
just
would.
Kind of, this is, that was, and I am kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, and they used to interview their own DJs, you know, which was boring and stuff, so they stopped doing that. But then along came ARD, and they had a sound, they had a proper sound, they had good guys. Ronan Collins was on in the afternoon there with the afternoon debate. It's a bit like Joe Duffy's programme at the moment. People used to ring in, and Stephen Rhodes, who went off to work in Birmingham afterwards. Dave C, who had a great radio voice, lovely fella, met him as well. And a few other guys like that. Then along, you know, this young voice came in, really perfect voice, a guy called Ian Dempsey. And the rumour has it he used to come from his school in Belvedere College to a Belvedere place at lunchtime and do his programme. And he sounded great. And he just had this thing, this sort of X Factor at the time. And I recently spoke to Aidan Cooney about that, and Aidan went in there as well and was making the tea and getting himself on the radio and all that kind of thing. But he ultimately surfaced, in my opinion, on Radio Dublin at the time. So 253 was Radio Dublin, and the jingles we have for that. ARD was 257, and they were good, very, very good. And we thought we'd reached the pinnacle with them. Tony Garrett was on there. We had this perfect radio station, and they were giving away stickers. If someone come up to you with a sticker, you get a fiver or a tenner if they saw one on your car, kind of thing. So that was the way that went. They had late night radio, they had specialist radio, and they did a little bit of community stuff as well at the weekends, where they did, you know, specialist programmes and all that. But it was a good programme.
You mentioned Tony Garrett. Was that Tony Fenton?
Tony Garrett was Gareth O'Callaghan, actually. Yeah. Tony Fenton is real name Tony Fagan, Lord rest him. Great guy. The voice, brilliant guy. You know,
ARD as well.
ARD. Big D, I think he might have been on as well. But ARD. And then there was a problem with the ownership of ARD. And they moved, changed the name, closed down, and they became... ARD stands for Alternative Radio Dublin, by the way. So there was Radio Dublin. They didn't call themselves RD, it was Radio Dublin 253. And then that was run by the infamous Captain Eamon Cook, and we all know about him. We won't talk about that now, but there was lots of people up there involved in that station, and there were a lot of good people, I'm sure. But
was the first split of Radio Dublin of note the Big D and James Dillon?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. You're correct there. Yeah. They were in Chapel Lane. Marty Whelan worked on that, he called himself Marty Hall. He used to do a drive time programme. Again, he worked locally in the PMPA. People hung on to their day jobs, and they were doing, obviously, they may have got paid, and what they got paid was the bus fare home, nearly, you know, you bought your own records. But the Big Day was in Chapel Lane, and there was a Kieran Murray involved in that as well. I think he went and ran an automatic station later on, Big D Automatic, and that was a continuous music station. And there was good guys. James Dillon, of course, was there. And there was the Paul Vincent, I think, was another guy who was in Cabra. And Dr. Don was with Eamon Cook originally, and he set up in Cabra, I think. And then they went, and Bernard Llewellyn, who was a businessman, and he was the original business person in the radio. I think things got a bit big for him, really, in that he didn't fancy this illegal operation. Perhaps that's my opinion on it.
But he took it to the Crofton Airport.
He took it to Belvedere Place, and from then the Crofton Airport became Radio 257. I'll have to find out exactly. I'm not quite sure. The name change came about. It was called Radio 257. And some great pictures going around there of that. Dave Kelly, Tony Fenton, Barry Lang, Ian Dempsey, all those guys in the station.
There was a community Radio 257 at the Country Club Port Marnock. Was that a different thing?
Nothing to do with it. I don't know anything about that.
Okay. So you've been talking in terms of a listener and what was happening in radio in Dublin at the time from about 77 to 81. Yourself, when did you go on the radio first?
Yeah, well, I loved being on the radio. I used to have a little microphone set up with the record player at home and studio, a Sharp 3-in-1 stereo, and there was one channel recorder on it. I made fashioned a microphone that went into it, and I wasn't able to play music and talk at the same time, so I used to have to just play music and then talk. So I made tapes of little programs.
What
and
year
all
are we talking?
The late 70s, 78, 77, 78. And listen to the radio and then mimicking those people and playing music. And then I made a tape on that and sent it up to, there was an ad in the Shaw's and Ballymun Shopping Centre, a DJ, young talent thing. And I made a tape and put it in an envelope. I remember going up and the envelope wouldn't seal. And I gave it to the girl at the till, and she stuck a sticky tape on it and said, thanks. And I thought, that's the last I'm going to see of that. But I whether I was the only entry or not, I don't know, but they rang me.
Which station was this?
That was ARD. And I was coming in from school one day, and I think that evening my mother said, oh, somebody rang for you today from ARD. And I said, what? And she says, I don't know what his name is. Ray McGarvin. I says, oh, I don't know. So it was a guy called Ray McGuigan who went on to work in RT as a producer afterwards, and he was a bearded gentleman. And I rang up and asked for him anyway, and Mike Maloney, I think, answered and said, yeah, come in Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. We're going to put you on for half an hour. So I come in, and the transmitter happened to break down that day. So I told everybody in the world that I knew. And after Stephen Rhodes, for some reason, the transmitter broke down and there was no signal, and there was no way of texting or tweeting or anything like that. So eventually they were back on the air at 6 o'clock, and I did 6 to 7. And I remember playing Michael Jackson's Ben, and I bought a brand new record, which was fascinating me at the time, called Le Freak by Chic. So that gives you, whenever that was out, yes, that was the year, I think it was 77, 78. So that was the year I did that. And they just said, thanks very much. I was 15 years of age. So
you got your chance.
I got my chance, and I just loved it. And it was great, and great fun and all that sort of thing. So they, like Aidan Cooney said to me, go up and tell the captain you're after being on, you know, you'll get a gig. Something in my sixth sense told me not to go near in Chicor, which I never did. And we eventually got into a station in downtown Cable Street called, I'm not sure which came first, whether it was Downtown Radio or Radio City. I think it might have been Radio City was the first incarnation of it. And then Downtown Radio was called as well.
Would you have a frequency for that?
260. 260, yeah. 260, yeah. Okay. They actually tried to go on 257 at one stage, but there was a row because they were very close to the other. So it became 260. And they were there for a few years. A couple of biggish names came out of there. Al Dunn was one of the guys there. Paul Allen was there. Paul King, he was called at the time. But that would have been my David Andrews days. And I did a Sunday evening, late night, Fridays, Saturday lunchtimes, all sorts of different times.
And musically, this was the kind of the disco,
yeah,
and
just anything.
The roller discos would have been,
that's
huge.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Would you have been DJing as a,
yeah, we,
a
myself,
mobile disco?
Yeah, myself and a mate of mine DJed. We DJed for fun again. We didn't really have any vehicles. We weren't driving. So we'd have to get lifts around by our parents or friends. So you got a gig on a Saturday night and you did it. And the cost of the gig paid for the sound tower equipment from Renla. We hired the equipment and that was it. So you bought your own records, and we used to borrow records and play them. So you did 21sts and stuff like that, and every boat club in Dublin, and tennis club or rugby club and football club.
Yeah. Were you telling me that you did the ARD, which was like kind of the tape from that you sent in, and you did the downtown and city in Cable Street. When did you work with Peter Gibney in a shed?
Yeah, Peter was great. He was there. Peter was a genius and a really good voice for radio, actually. He was there.
What year was this now? This was
1980, I think. We were on 80-81 KELO Radio and Swords. David Kelly took it on. He gave a few of us a gig out there. That had a really good lineup, actually. John Clark was there. Colm Caffrey, Colm Hayes, who he was known as on the radio, myself and Paul Allen, lots of guys. We've got lots of gigs.
Allen on KLO?
No, Tony Allen wasn't on it. He was one of the people who did voiceover stuff like that.
Gibney was the engineer for KLO.
Peter Gibney was the engineer, and as happened out in KLO, it was a great little radio station. It was in a kind of a loft inside the yard. It's still there, the building. So we went in. There was a downstairs area, and then upstairs was, I think it was originally somewhere, it was kind of a crash pad for somebody, but they
just push you on the location. And where?
Yeah, North Street Swords. We were at North Street Swords was the location for that, and we just about halfway up there, I think it's a car sales place in, but just inside it there, there was a small little hut, which kind of a little building which had a proper roof on it, and upstairs there was the most magnificent romantic pirate radio scene you could ever see. This really good studio with a roof, flat kind of a roof, which had a sort of an apex in it, and it was really good. So that was actually that was where we had the studio, and we had a glass front outside with an ante room, and then we had a position for a newsreader and a position for somebody else to actually operate the station decks and all that.
KLO would have been medium wave.
Medium wave, yeah. KLO, good question on KLO.
Well, this was the North Street Swords.
Yeah, what's the frequency that we had was 244. Yeah, 244. Yeah.
And would the transmitter have been at the studios, or did you link on FM?
Yeah, you know, not sure. We were on only medium wave, but we had a good signal. The signal was up to Dundalk, and we used to go as far south as Wicklow. I know that signal was strong. Liverpool, we got calls from Liverpool. Really, really good. That had a great music ethic. We used to play kind of a little bit new wavy kind of thing. You know what I mean? Teardrop Explodes at the time. You know, ABC. Really nice kind of
Liverpool sound.
There was a really nice sound of music, and it was selected. David was a really good station organizer at the time, and he gave us great tuition. Personally, myself.
Did it have any other names or variants of its name?
Now, KLO came about, it was Kelly, it was David, and Lawless was the guy who owned it. It was in Lawless's yard, actually, a place called Lawless's yard. Brendan Lawless, I think he might be an auctioneer locally, he would have been an auctioneer, and he lived there, and he lived in the area, and he ran the station, you know.
And was it for fun or for money?
No, he was money. We got paid there, actually. Yeah. I did get paid. We got
payslips.
We got payslips. We got a few quid there, yeah. Now, we didn't always get paid, but it depended on what happened. If the few bob came in for the ads, you know, that's the way it was. But look, we would have done it for free, and we did a lot of the time, you know.
Yeah. And was there a station you were on that was like in a shed?
Yeah, there was. That was after KLO. Peter Gibney lived in. He was a great man with sort of electronics and all that sort of thing. He gave us a call and said, where we have a station. Myself and Paul went down, and he had a coal shed, actual coal shed, and there was only enough room for decks on a shelf, and we stood inside the coal shed and presented on Radio Carla in Dublin in Shantala Road in Santry, somewhere like that.
Yeah. And that was his place?
That was his place.
And it was like a very short-lived station, was it?
Yeah, it was a matter of weeks, just I think, yeah.
And he then went on to engineer for Sunshine?
Yeah, Sunshine arrived, the Super Pirates arrived in, and then everybody else was kind of gone, you know? Like, there wasn't any, not necessarily gone, but the big ones, the Sunshine, then there was a split in Sunshine to Nova, and then the FM sound of Nova took over with Kiss FM, then following shortly afterwards, and that became then the men from the boys. You know, this was like Home Farm FC versus everybody else at the time. You know, they were kind of, these were the proper boys, and like everybody couldn't play for the top team, so you know, confidence and all them things that people would have had and said. So I remember Colm Hayes going up there and getting a gig. There's a few guys. John Clark went up there. Bob Gallico, all these guys got. They were in at the Green Acres originally, up in Rathfarnham, and the massive mass there. And then they kind of got all respectable into Herbert Street, and that was a great. We used to go in there, and Tony was in there, and Sunshine was still on at the time. But I kind of think that it was a bit like Pepsi and Coke. You know, the two of them were good, and they had their listeners, and they produced a very, very nice sound, and it was very tight. They had good ads, you know. They used to deal with the agencies, and they were making a bit of money, yeah.
And did you then continue with anybody? While
I think we did a few different, like there was always a gig going. I did, there was various stations. I don't know how I ended up on these. One in Phibsborough over a bookie shop, which was a nice little studio actually set up very well. We also, I did Ballymun. I can't remember the name of it.
Was it ABC? Did it become Annabelle?
It may have done. I can't remember. It was just up from the State Cinema on the corner. I think the shop is empty now, but it was a bookie shop there just over the opposite Conan Doyle's diagonally. But I remember looking out at the traffic one Sunday afternoon. And again, it was a kind of a little bit like playing in a football team. Yeah. And someone would say, would you bring your boots and you could go and do come down, do your records, and people would ring in and say, oh, is that where you are now? You know, kind of you had people that listened and would ring the phone. So the phone was everything. And the phone always rang, in fairness, in those days. Like, it wasn't text machines. And you got letters. I got postcards and letters. I mean, you didn't get a lot of them, but you got you did occasionally get letters from somebody. So you became part of people's, maybe their routines. And like, it wasn't because you were brilliant. It was because maybe people like
what you play. Communication-wise at the time.
And then we got a chance to work in Capital Radio in Dundrum. Again, myself and Paul went up. We submitted some demo tapes, and it was he's on Q102 now. He's he's a nice guy. He took myself and Paul on. He said, you seem to have perfectly modulated voices, or maybe he said something like that. That's what we heard. But he gave us a gig, and I was on Sunday morning, very early actually, because the shifts they got, that was like, it's a bit like Sunshine is now. You did about 6-5 hours, you know. So yeah, and that was billed as the album station. So we were playing album tracks.
Right, so that was the Capital that would have been 96 FM, became Night Sky 96
at the time. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
In those days, they had to broadcast all hours because there was no automation or computers or, like, tapes would run out after a number of hours.
So that's right.
You had to have people there to play the music.
Yeah, that was a very nice station. It had a really good setup. I remember it as a professionally organised place, and the signal was really good. It didn't move. It was in an old monastery, Robert Emmett House in Dundrum there, just near Bath.
Is that the one that went on to McGonagall's and that kind of alternative music scene?
You kind of lose track of what happened then.
And was there television?
There was talk of a television, pirate television station starting at that time. I'm not sure who was behind that. We did get paid there as well. I have some wage slips from there at the time. And that was, these are small money, you know. It's like, again, like virtually your bus fare. But they had a studio set up for, like, to do a sort of a talk show or a continuity style studio, which was set up and it had a plant and two chairs and all that kind of stuff, you know.
So they were ready for television, but it didn't actually happen, did it?
I think there was word got out that it might be happening. And I think there was a stern warning sent out that if you start trying to do that,
and we'd then stop. Did you continue radio or DJing throughout the 80s?
Yeah, I think I might have grown up a little bit then. We did a bit of DJing, I did a bit of stuff like that. But the radio scene then, we did a bit, I'm not sure exactly in my own mind, we just kind of discovered different things, got a car, got a motorbike, and, you know, started to work for a living and left school. And it was a choice of, you know, there wasn't really a radio career to be made. You had to chance your arm at the radio thing. And it was probably a little bit too sensible to risk my working life on pirate radio. So
you mightn't have been involved in it, but your interest in radio would have always been there. And then they closed all the stations, or they tried, on the 31st and 30th of December 1988. Do you remember that day?
I do. I remember the close down. Everything fell silent, and there was a RT tried to play a little bit more music. And Larry Gogan himself used to say they'd stick him in the afternoon from 2 to 5 to play pop music, and they tried to just keep it going in that way. Because it was one station, and it was fundamentally a talk station, which had a big news content in it. And Gay Bourne was on in the morning, and then they had Liam. I can't think of his name now. He used to be on at lunchtime. The miscellany. He used to have this kind of a miscellany program. Liam Nolan, actually, and there various different people like that. Mike Murphy Breakfast, Mike Murphy Breakfast, Gay Bourne, lunchtime miscellany, or whatever it was called at the time. Then news at 1 o'clock. The afternoon was the same program as it is now, but different people did it. Marion Finucane did it. The afternoon debate, or Women Today, they had actually, which wouldn't be allowed now, I'm sure.
Harbour Hotel
Harbour Hotel just before lunch, and the afternoon then was various different bits and pieces. They used to do like the kind of thing that's on lunchtime Saturday, a documentary or a kind of a technical program or something.
But all the guys you mentioned, many of them went into 2FM or yeah. went into it later, like Tony Fenton, and yeah. who had been on Sunshine, I think,
yeah.
Ian Dempsey, Dave Fanning, John Clark.
Yeah.
So did you listen to them on 2FM? Or was Radio 2 at the
Radio
time?
Radio 2. The first Radio 2 broadcast happened from about 12:30 one day for some reason, or 12:20 they started. I remember it was an unusual time.
In May 1979.
That's right. And the first record they played was Like Clockwork by the Boomtown Rats. I have it on a tape somewhere.
Larry Gove.
And he said, we've been waiting for an all-day radio station for quite some time in Ireland. Now here it is, and this is the opening song.
By Clockwork.
And he played it. It was tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. So Larry's the voice of radio. Brilliant man. I've met him a couple of times. Great voice.
You get back into radio decades later, do you?
Yeah, I just loved it. Listened all the way. Would always have listened to, like my wife would say to me, you're listening to the radio and you're not listening to me. I would listen to Lynx. I would listen, and it, you know, and for years, this sounds a little bit like I have a set of a mental issue, but I would talk to myself in the car as if I was on the radio years ago, which sounds a little bit sad, but that's what happens when you get the bug. But then I discovered the wonderful Near FM and Near North East Access Radio, and that's what it is.
When did you start with Near?
I started in 2013, and around the end of August, I did a proposal for a program, and I did one hour thing Northside Today, and then I did a program called The Story Behind the Song, which I did 19 or 20 episodes, which was great. And then they said, you're not bad, will you do something else? I said, yeah. So we come up with In the Spotlight, and I do that at the weekends now. And we present the business program, myself and Declan Ralph, which led me on to do a degree in journalism, media and broadcasting. So I've done it backwards. So I should have done it when I was 16.
You're qualified to talk about radio.
Well, no, I don't know about that. But I have a successful business, which is outside of that area. I also do MC work for people, just for charities. I do quizzes. And you know, when the red light goes on.
I think you're downplaying the fact that there's a certificate from the University of Wolverhampton that says you have a degree in radio.
True, it was great, and I loved doing that, and that was just I ran in the door every evening in Colossia-Dooling in Dublin to do that. I never missed one episode. I lapped it up. When it finished, I would have gone back and done it again.
I missed one. I missed one. My sister's wedding. But that's it.
Well, I had to go to something. I was in England on business or something, and I couldn't something to do with my work. And but I loved it.
Looking back on it all, today, the 18th of October, 2018, is 30 years to the day that the IRTC put that ad in the paper saying we're going to have licenses in all these counties, and the pirates, you must close down on the 31st of December, or you can't apply. Looking back on the whole period, any time, what's your memory of the whole thing? Sum it up. What was it all about?
I didn't have a massive interest in sport personally. I liked the little bit athletics when I was in school. I didn't really play football. I didn't really watch football on television. I liked music, but I loved radio. For some reason, this idea that you could talk into a piece of equipment and people far away could hear you. I still am fascinated by that today, the FM or the medium wave, that people can actually listen. I heard Graham Norton the other day saying he's a bit of a show-off. I probably am a bit of a show-off. And the combination of the two are just wonderful.
Dave Daly, thank you very much for the last 24 minutes of your time.
Thank you. See you Saturday.